is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Afghanistan, summer of 2021. August, those days of fright. And at this point, years later, a few families have made it through to the United States and are intact, and their children are at school. We have a family here in Connecticut that describes. But all those people left behind, all those people we can't account for, and the tragedy of those days watching on television and video, the flight from Kabul, it still dominates conversation in Congress, thanks to an investigation ongoing. I welcome Bill Rasho of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. He keeps the Long War Journal that very carefully, hour by hour, documented those August days in 2021. And also Ambassador Hossein Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now at the Hudson Institute, who followed this story very carefully, not only during and after, but before warning and warning and warning. Bill, I read from the CNN report, hours of closed-door testimony from three top State Department officials shed new light on the, quote, unprecedented, end quote, situation in the final days of the U.S. presence in Afghanistan, as the officials were rushed to the country with virtually no time to prepare and no established emergency evacuation plan in place when they arrived. No time to prepare. Bill, you were prepared for months, for the collapse. What does that mean, State Department didn't have time to prepare? Good evening to you, Bill.
Good evening, John. Yeah, and I think I was on a panel with you, with Hossein. I predicted that the Afghan government would not make it out by the end of the summer. And we said that in, I said that in the spring. It was somewhere in, like, I believe it was late April. So, you know, it was quite obvious on this end. What all this means is the State Department wasn't prepared. The Biden administration wasn't prepared. The U.S. military wasn't prepared to conduct the non-combatant evacuation operation, which is also known as the NEO. They weren't prepared because they didn't understand the situation on the ground. They didn't understand the Taliban was strong, that the Afghan government was weak, that the Taliban had laid the groundwork for their final campaign to take over Afghanistan. They were not prepared for the impact of the U.S. withdrawal, what that impact would have on the Afghan military. If you remember, the U.S. officials at the beginning, when the withdrawal was announced, they were saying the Afghan government won't be in threat of Taliban for at least 2 years. And then as a month or so went on, it was, well, maybe a year. And then they got it down. Maybe it's 6 months, and maybe it's 3 months. And then by the time the collapse happened, they were saying maybe a month or so. So they were never prepared for this, John. They couldn't see what was happening. We spend billions upon billions on intelligence and defense and diplomacy. And yet the U.S. government was blind. And, you know, how folks like Hossein and myself and a select few others, John, were able to see this when the entire U.S. government couldn't. Unfortunately, no one's asking those questions. And we'll never really get to the bottom of it because there's a lot of CYA going on in Washington now. Everyone's just going to want to point right now the congressional committee in charge of investigating it. They're going to put all the blame on state for the NEO. The military is doing that right now. State will point at the military. It'll just be a bunch of finger pointing. But the reality of just how bad the analysis and the understanding of the war in Afghanistan and our position and the Afghan government's position and the Taliban's commitment to its cause, none of that will be understood by the wider public, because there's very little desire by those in power, those responsible for the policies in Afghanistan. They're responsible for it, so therefore they don't want to get to the bottom of their own failure.
Mr. Ambassador, I have a remark here from General Mark Milley, now retired, but chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time of the evacuation flight catastrophe. It is my assessment, said the general last week in an open hearing at House Foreign Affairs Committee, it is my assessment that the decision came too late from State Department. You're very familiar working with the State Department, working with all diplomats. The decision coming too late, does that make sense to you that state would put off a decision that would lead, that would, they knew at the time, would suggest a catastrophe was imminent? Good evening to you, Mr. Ambassador.
Good evening. I think, John, what really happened here, Bill rightly pointed out that nobody wants to take responsibility. The problem came with the willingness of two successive administrations, the Trump administration and the Biden administration, to bluff themselves and fool themselves into believing that they actually had a deal with the Taliban. And because they believed that the Taliban will do what they expect them to do rather than what the Taliban really did, therefore, there was just no will, no political will to think about the what might unfold. Now, if they had listened to Bill and if they had listened to me, they would have understood that the Taliban have no intention of peacefully handing power to some kind of a coalition government that the Trump administration's appointed negotiator, Mr. Khalilzad, pretended existed. There was no agreement on this handover. And so therefore, nobody prepared for it. The military didn't and the State Department didn't. So yes, the State Department is at fault for not preparing it. The military is at fault for not preparing it. But the buck stops with the two presidents who allowed their respective administrations to believe that a peace deal had been reached when there was no peace deal. And that is what led to the circumstances. And even now, by the way, the discussion of Afghanistan, you just read the State Department statements, you just read the administration's commentary, and you will find that there is still a willful ignorance of the reality on the ground. People are still talking about how we can actually live with the Taliban. U.S. money is being sent to the Taliban on the pretense that it is helping the Afghan people, keeping and propping up that regime. So when you don't have, and by the way, the media ignored it all because the American public was exhausted with the Afghan war. No one in Congress spoke out at that time saying, hey, we don't have a deal. What are the options? What will happen if this the Kabul regime falls? What happens if the Taliban take over? Everybody wanted to believe what they wanted to believe rather than recognize reality. And I would like Bill to address that point as well.
Yeah, I can do that. I mean, the reality, and I say, and I think you know this better than anyone, policy desires drove the decisions in Afghanistan, not facts. So in order, yeah. The reality is really three successive presidents. President Obama also wanted to leave Afghanistan, but I think he actually at some point recognized the Taliban wasn't playing ball the way he wanted, and he didn't want to be left holding the ball of the Taliban-controlled Afghanistan. So at least he was politically astute enough to be aware that if he had done a full withdrawal from Afghanistan, it would have been a collapse. So he kicked that can down the road. But the desire in both the Trump and Biden administration was leave Afghanistan. Well, how do you leave Afghanistan? Well, you'd lie to yourself by saying the Taliban isn't allied with Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has no strength in Afghanistan. The Taliban are a partner in peace. The Taliban will respect the Afghan constitution and human rights. And, these are the lies that successive administrations told themselves in order to leave Afghanistan. You said it right, willful ignorance. And that's exactly what it was. And this is how we got to Afghanistan. So the finger pointing that we're watching now, people pointing the finger at state for this on the NEO or the military for that. And, yes, I mean, those are very important questions, but no one's really asking. And if tried to push members of the committee to get to this, but they don't. They really just seem concerned with making political statements over anything. Is how did we get to this point in Afghanistan? But again, nobody wants to answer, or they don't want to ask those questions, let alone answer them.
Bill, my memory is that the decision was made in April of that year, and the announcement from the White House. And at that point, you had a map, and my memory of the map is that it showed a fist closing on Kabul as the provincial headquarters fell one by one to the advance of the Taliban. And the rationalization, as I recall it, it's all a little fog of war, was that we'll hold Kabul. That's the only thing that matters. We'll continue to have a military presence in Kabul. At some point, the decision was made that we can't keep 2,500 troops in the country, which was the assessment of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, would have adequately provided security for Kabul and the Afghan National Army. We can only keep 600. And that's when they took Bagram off the map. Bill, this screams at you as a disaster. Screams. I'm sure these are astute players at state. They saw it. And you're telling me it wasn't convenient for them to challenge policy, to write a plan B? It's a
puzzle. John, the ones I really question are the military. The military generals, General Milley, General McKenzie, General Miller, who was the commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, they should have known. I mean, look, any private or specialist or sergeant would know that doing a NEO from Bagram, I'm sorry, from Kabul would have been a massive mistake. Kabul sits in a bowl. The airport is like a mile and a half from the center of town. It was indefensible. The State Department officials were talking about this in that CNN report that you referenced. They just saluted and said, yes, sir, that's fine. Oh, you want to only keep 600 troops? And this was another big part of the problem, John. Our policy was, how many troops do we keep in country? Not how many troops do we need and what kind of troops do we need to achieve the mission? It was a numbers game, and it's been a numbers game way back to the President Obama's surge. How many, that was what he battled with David Petraeus, General Petraeus, and others over, and they just battled over numbers. No, 40,000. No, we need 80,000. Let's settle on 60,000. No, we need 100,000. No, it's what do we need to complete the mission? But those, and it was this type of mindset in Afghanistan. It was such a failure, John, on so many levels. It, you know, you mentioned the map, right? You know, the Taliban's plan was, we'll take the rural areas and meet in the cities. The NATO or U.S. and Afghan military planning was, we'll secure the important population centers. Well, you know, again, the Taliban recognized this as a failure, as did I, which is why I created the map to test the theory. It was, you know, all of this. You know, and I will say this, John, I didn't do it with millions, let alone billions of dollars in funding from the U.S. taxpayer. I did it with minimal resources, was able to see the Taliban strategy. Not because I'm especially smart or anything like that, John, because this was exceptionally easy to see. And you don't need to be a genius or go to war colleges or to the finest universities and study political science to see what the Taliban was doing. You could just read a couple of pages from Mao's little red book and you would have figured it out.
We're headed to Pakistan. There might be trouble. Ambassador Hossein Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the U.S., is with me. He's now at the Hudson Institute. Bill Rajo for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. There's an election in India and strange remarks to me. When we come back, I'm John Batchelor.